the beginning. Welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. It has been a while, but I am Brandon Hall, and I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, it has been a couple of weeks. I think I have lost track of time. How are you doing?
It has. I'm good. I think it's been about 2 weeks. Yeah, and I'm good now. It's been a rough couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But I know it has been for you too, but we are back and ready to rock. So, yeah.
Yeah, very, very busy couple of weeks, and still, life is still busy, but we're back.
Yeah, still busy. Good. Are you doing all right? You doing good?
Yeah, doing good. Just, I have, like, no downtime, so
it's
just, there's always something to do.
Always.
But we're getting through it. We have some fun topics to talk about today, though. I don't think we have any like, difficult topics like we've dealt with for the past couple of weeks, so.
A little more lighthearted.
Yeah, a little more of a fun episode, but we're going to talk about how we find time to write, adaptations, and how research factors into our writing, and a few other things. But before we do all that, we always update everybody on what we're reading. So, Ash, what are you currently reading? I'm sure something new, because it's been a couple of weeks, right?
Yes, I've actually made a couple of changes. I think, yeah, so... Well, I think, do we want to do what we're writing first? Our writing update or reading? Did you say reading or writing? I can't remember.
Oh, sorry. I said reading, but I think I put our work in progress update down by the writing topics. But if you wanted to do that now, you could also do that now.
No, that's okay. I'll start with what we're reading. Okay. So I finished my advanced copy of Dreadful by Caitlin Razakis. Mm-hmm. And I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. Really liked it. I haven't done my official TikTok video on it, but my review is up on Goodreads. I loved it. It comes out later this month. I made very little headway with another book I was reading, but I put that to the side because I picked up a history book on the Israel-Palestine conflict just to be a little bit more knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. And then started a new arc, The Witch Stone by Henry Neff. So lots Very of cool. things going on. What about you? What are you reading?
Yeah, well, I finally finished Before They're Hanged, the second book in the First Law trilogy by Joe Abercrombie. I talked about it a little bit, and I think the second book definitely sticks the landing just like the first book. You know, it starts off slow, like I said, but we're on to book 3, so now it's time to see if the whole series can do that. And then I have a couple of arc books. One is our TikTok pirate captains. I'm forgetting the title of the second book. I'm really sorry, but it's the second book in his Eldritch Depths. You guys know which one, I'm sure. But that is the arc.
Yeah, that's good. Nice. Excited about that.
Yes. So I don't think I made as much progress as you, because I was a little bit unable to read because I was traveling, and I need to be comfortable to read.
No, I fully agree. I was able to, I was just proud I got to finish one book for the month of May because I'm so bad at my, I'm so bad at reading.
No, me too. I feel bad when my reading update is like, I read a few pages since last week.
Yeah, right. No, completely agree.
But we don't have any audience questions or podcast updates to go over, I don't think.
I don't have anything.
But we do have some indie releases to spotlight. So it doesn't look like anything is coming out at the end of May. So we're going to highlight some that we missed over the past couple of weeks. But Ash, do you want to share these with everybody?
Sure. Yeah, I snuck onto your video that you made and wrote a few down. so at the end of the month of April, we had a couple that we missed. Modern Day Muses by L.L. Nelson was out April 23rd. Next is Stranger in the Pod by Shazara Brooks, which was out April 25th. And for the month of May, the 2 weeks that we missed, May 1st, The Moon Run by Kathleen Contine. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. I'm sorry if I didn't. May 17th is Endless by Rosie Flint, and May 18th, Apple Crates and Porcelain Plates by Robin Call. So congrats to all of our new indie authors.
Yes, congratulations, everybody. And sorry that we weren't here, but hopefully this still works for you guys. And yeah, just congratulations on the new releases. All right, moving into our indie publishing slash book topics. We don't really have any stories that are tied to news today. And I think we can probably just going forward, this section doesn't always have to be tied to a news story because we've had We've had several weeks where it's just a light news week. I think it's just the industry is not as fast as you know, others when it comes to news, I guess. But we still have some topics kind of more on the business side of writing and, you know, managing your author brand and things like that to discuss. The first one, and I didn't really think about this until just recently, but I know you review a lot of books on TikTok. And so I wanted to talk about reviewing books as like an aspiring author or even as a published author and kind of our approach and our opinions on that. You know, I know everyone has kind of a different opinion on this. There doesn't really seem to be a right answer. You know, some authors won't review other people's books. Some will. Some are like, I'll do positive reviews, but if I didn't like it, I just won't say anything. So there's a lot of different ways to go about it. And I was just curious, you know, as someone who's going to be a published author one day, what... do you think your review process or, you know, sharing reviews to social media, is that going to change after you're published or are you kind of hoping to continue doing that?
Yeah. So it's really, it's a hard question only because I wrote a short story for an anthology a couple of years ago under a pseudonym because it was like a naughty monster romance anthology. And I ended up getting tagged in the review of one of the reviewers who was reviewing it about my short story. She went through and reviewed all of them. And it was nerve-wracking when I like opened up the TikTok to see what she was saying. And that has kind of stuck with me. It's hard because I think reviews solely exist, at least reviews in the public sphere of like Goodreads or here on TikTok. Reviews exist for the readers, right? In my opinion. Some authors prefer to read their reviews, some don't. So knowing this, I feel like once big authorship comes or once the book comes out or the anthology comes out, I don't want anyone to think that there's like a bias involved or like I'm just doing this to have people come to my page and then read my book. So I don't know what the guidance is here for like book reviewers who then turn authors. I think it is good for like small indie authors to review other indie authors' work. But yeah, published authors reviewing books, like if a V.E. Schwab or a G.R.R. Martin are like publicly reviewing books, that's different than their blurb on the back of books that they give when they are asked to review books, you know? So it's I don't know. I think it's like a new space that no one really knows. I haven't seen like authors, not authors, that sounds like indie authors aren't authors, which that's not true, but like bigger named authors review books on TikTok in the way that the indie author space does. So we'll see. There's no right or wrong here, I don't think. What do you think? Because that was kind of scattered and random. But
no, that's okay. That's kind of how my brain is today, so I'm going to probably come off the same way.
Okay, good. Mine too.
But no, I'm kind of on the same page where I want to review books, but at the same time, I'm aware of, you know, that fact that someone who's going to publish me a book one day, you know, that's going to come with extra baggage of some sort, right? Like, I don't want it to come off as like I'm attacking these other books or anything to try and promote myself or anything like that. So I think, you know, I did start my book talk and Bookstagram accounts with a couple of reviews, but I've kind of scaled back on them a little bit. And what I'm trying to do and what I will probably continue to do after I'm published is just kind of emulate what I see in traditional publishing where I might share like a few positive words about a new release, especially if I'm asked like from an indie author, they share their book with me and they say, if you enjoy, can you, you know, give me something to put on the back or just, you know, something I can use in advertising. Happy to do that, as long as I enjoy the book and whatnot. But I don't think I'm ever gonna publish like a scathing negative review of something
Right.
going forward. I'll probably just read it and just keep those thoughts to myself. Just because I don't think that's a good look, just and not because authors aren't allowed to have opinions. It's just there's so much extra like background information there that you're not necessarily the, I feel like as an author, the right one to be reviewing other books, because like you said, they're for readers.
Yeah, right.
And so I just personally wouldn't feel comfortable putting out a negative review of another book.
Oh, yeah.
I may do like a brief positive review or something, but no. And as far as like being outwardly critical of things, I don't see that being a common occurrence in
Yeah.
my future social media presence.
Yeah, it's hard because I really enjoy my like I enjoy critical reviews, both reading them and giving them. I've had to DNF a couple this year of advanced copies, and I it which suck. And it's people who relish in doing that, I think, are strange. I enjoy it because I think that is important for readers to get good. Like, whenever I look at a book that I'm about to pick up, I will look at the top reviews, and then I'll look at the 1-star reviews and see what the 1-star reviews are saying. That way I'm getting like a balanced perspective.
I kind of do the
And I
same
feel
thing.
like, yeah, right. Like, and I feel like right now, as a baby author, I still want to do the same because I want people to do the same for mine when it comes out. So, but again, yeah, you don't want to be known as like the author who shits on or gives positive reviews to just a few, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want that kind of like drama and someone to make something of it anyway. But
Yeah,
like,
always.
yeah, it's crazy. It's very hard. It's a new world for us out here.
Yeah, it's definitely something to navigate carefully.
Yes.
I think, any approach is valid as long as you're doing it respectfully and with the right intentions.
Agreed. Agreed. And I'll say, if someone asks specifically, like a peer or someone who enjoys your writing and is like writing their own and wants feedback or a review from you, there's something to be said about saying yes, but then if you don't like it, just going back to them specifically and just being like, look, like I wasn't a huge fan, but I think this is good for the right people. I don't want to put a bad review out for you. Just, you know, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it. Best of luck, whatever. So
Yeah,
a
totally.
lot of people forget that you can just keep things private if that's the case. You know, you don't have to, if you don't like it, you don't have to give a review and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Well, kind of on the same topic here, I wanted to talk a little bit about our social media presence. Obviously, TikTok is only a small part of our lives, and
Yes.
what people see is what we allow them to see. So,
Right.
as an indie author who uses social media, I've kind of noticed some people could really use a lesson in PR as I'm browsing this app. Not to say I'm like a PR expert by any means. I have no like formal training or anything, but I think I just have enough common sense and restraint to not post certain content, or to know when I should just not engage with something. And I don't think everyone does. But that brings me to the question, how do you navigate like knowing what to post and what not to, and just kind of managing your online author brand or persona? Because I think that's an important thing to talk about, especially with people who don't have as much experience, marketing themselves online. I thought maybe we could share our approaches, and not that we're authorities on the subject, but.
No, so I actually, when I was reading over the document, I loved this question because I hadn't even really considered this aspect of social media presence. I've always been, just even before I did the authorship stuff or like getting on TikTok, my Instagram is usually public. I don't really have any shame in posting what I would normally share to people, and that's my rule. If I can back it up, or if I don't mind somebody seeing it, like if my actual real people job were gonna see it, I wouldn't be embarrassed, you know? Now, I will say, like, on TikTok, I tend to cuss a little bit more. I kind of just press the button a little bit, I guess, in terms of like what could be deemed appropriate. But I, again, my rule is like, if I can't defend it, if I can't defend it, if it's not actually hurting anyone or their feelings or like offending anybody, and if I wouldn't mind like my little sister eventually stumbling upon it when she's old enough to see it, that's kind of where I'm at. You know, I mean, I have family members who follow me on here, but I will say people kind of take it and run. I mean, they will like, I've had a couple of controversial TikToks that I have responded to and gotten heated about. I've fallen into the rage bait, whatever. But some people tend to take the drama like way too far. And then that's when you're like, oh, a PR team would be great because, you know, or the authors who go and attack reviewers or who comment on reviews and are like, well, that's not what I meant. It's like, so for me, it's all fun and games. I'm not actually taking it super, super seriously. It is TikTok. Let's be frank and let's be real. But it can be hard. Sometimes I post something and at first I'm confident and then I'm like, ooh, is this a little too much? But then it's like, but that's how I feel and that's just my authentic self. And I feel like if I were to pitch myself to a publisher or anything like that, or like self-publish, I wouldn't be culling my content to make sure no one is upset. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, no, kind of a similar approach. I don't have public facing social media that's not like book related or something like part of, a business, I guess, if you want to say that.
Yeah.
Like my personal stuff is all private, but in either one, I don't ever I kind of, take the same approach as you. Like, am I okay with my family seeing this? Am I okay with my
Yeah.
job seeing this? Because that's an
Right.
important consideration in the modern world. Your employers will check.
Yes.
So I just try to conduct myself like I would in real life, I guess. Like, I'm not a very hostile person, so I don't tend to engage with things that way.
You calling me hostile, Brandon? Are
No, not at
you
all.
implying? No,
Actually, I wanted to say,
I'm
so
just joking.
to that note though, like I think that I am very much a restrained person, so I like there are certain things I will never discuss on like a business account unless it's like, something I'm really, really convicted about. But I don't
Right.
touch politics, I don't touch like personal thing. Like this is strictly a book talk account.
Yeah.
So if it's not book related, I'm not going to talk about it. And if it's like so controversial that it's going to get heat no matter what, I won't talk about it. Unless it's something
Right.
that I'm really personally convicted about, and then I just have to figure out how to handle that,
Yeah.
tactfully. But that said, I don't think you can, like, I think the way you do it, like I've seen some of your TikToks where you do get a little bit of heat in the comments, and it's kind of fun to
Yeah.
read them sometimes, so sometimes I
Oh,
lurk there.
yeah.
But no, I think you do a good job of like kind of engaging in the banter without taking it too far. And I don't think you have to completely isolate yourself from those things or that may
Yeah.
be a little more controversial. I think it's totally fine to present your authentic opinions on things. You just have to know how to do it. And I think you do a good
Yeah.
job.
I it's funny you say that. I think, you know, there is a difference between people like my personal Instagram is private now because I'm like, I don't, you know, back when I was in college, I was like, I don't care, whatever. But it used to be public facing until super recently, but I am so chronically online. I am a Tumblr, like OG Tumblr girl. I'm like you know, in the chats kind of just talking smack and a huge old YouTube comment like discourse. Oh no, my AirPods are about to die.
Oh no.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're all good.
Perfect. Well, sorry the audio changed. They died, so that's great.
No worries.
Yeah, so that's the difference. Like me like bantering with people in the comments, I kind of get like an old school like internet thrill. I'm like, yeah, like let's talk, but it's so second nature to me now that it doesn't like
on how it is involved. I'm like, okay, yeah, this thread is going forever. But good, I don't look like a crazy person in the comments half the time. Usually they're just trolls who are trying to get a rise, and I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
No, I totally get the old internet thing. I grew up in Xbox 360 lobbies, which...
Scary. It's a scary world out there.
Yeah. Definitely. But yeah, I think just, you know, be smart. If you are doubting whether you should post something, maybe just don't do it.
Yes. If you post something, like... think in your mind, is this someone that someone else is going to make a TikTok on me about? Like, yeah. That's, you know, is someone going to make a 40-minute long YouTube deep diving into who I am because I said this one thing on the internet? Then I shouldn't say it. Then I shouldn't say it or do it. So, yeah.
Very true.
Those are good questions. I like this.
Well, those are indie publishing / business topics for the week. So I think we can go ahead and move into our writing topics. But first we have our weekly, kind of, even though it's been 2 weeks, work in progress check-in. I'm sure we've both made a little bit of progress. Ash, how are your current writing projects coming along?
They are going better. I haven't touched A Filthy Hunger in a hot minute. I've kind of been putting all my focus on the short story. Which I finally finished part one. So I am technically halfway through because I had the prologue. I finished part one and I am 1,000 words into part two. So we're good. We're roughly halfway. And I'm feeling good about it. Seeing where everyone else was at too on the Discord today made me feel a lot better about being behind. I've been like really scrambling and I'm like, okay, no. All right. We can take like a little bit of a breather. Like,
yes, please.
Keep on that pace, but also you're in the same boat with everybody else. So that was good. I am going on a self little writing retreat by myself with no dog and no boy and no friends to work on A Filthy Hunger, just a mini self vacay really, but that was the whole point, is like a little writing retreat for myself the beginning of June. So that'll be what I'm looking forward to, that, just to be able to write all weekend without having any responsibility.
Did you say that was the beginning of June, or sorry, you cut out
for beginning of June.
Very cool. I should do one of those one day. A self writing retreat.
Yeah. Go to the little Airbnb. The one I have is like in the middle of nowhere next to a river, but it's like close to wineries. So I'm super, super excited about it.
Very cool.
What about you? How's your writing? But I know it's been busy.
Yeah. So I didn't get any writing done when I was traveling, which was like for 5 days. I know I said I can't usually read when I'm traveling unless I'm comfortable. I absolutely cannot write outside of home. I'm just not someone who can do it. I know some people can write anywhere, and that's really cool. I wish I could do that. over about the past week, I've got about 1,000 words written. It's mostly for the short story, for the anthology. A Knight of Knives is kind of taking a backseat to that for now, even though they're you know, they're both in the same world, so it's okay. Sure. But the Blades for Hire story is my priority, and that will be done first. So and it was very cool to see everyone else's progress updates, and I'm glad you felt a little better about seeing those, because I certainly do too, because I feel like I'm progressing slower than everyone else, and I feel bad for that because I'm like overseeing everything. So
yeah, but I was glad to see everyone else, literally like hearing you and then seeing everyone else like August, September, I'll be good to go. And I'm like, oh my God, thank God. Like it's good though to have someone like you who's leading the charge, who's also like, life is crazy, let's just take it easy so that the product that we put out to people is the best it can be. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think I lost my train of thought. I was just going to say, you know, none of us are full-time authors, at least I don't think so. We all have full-time jobs, families, and things like that. So I'm definitely a little more relaxed with the deadlines because I'm not like a big publishing company that needs to hit profit targets and things like that. Like, this is really just like a passion project. So I want everyone to be happy with it. And most importantly, everyone to be, you know, prioritizing their mental health and things like that.
Yeah.
No, so If you're listening, we probably won't hit the, I think I initially said we were aiming for summer 2024. I don't think we're going to hit that, but most likely still in the latter half of the year, but we'll keep you guys updated.
You know, I should probably do some research and see when self-published books, I guess this is a good question to add so I can, you know, maybe talk about it next week. Mm-hmm. The seasons of self-publishing, like when the best time to self-publish a book or, you know, something like the anthology is.
Yeah.
Because I assume summer is a good time for like summer read reasons, right? Like your vacation at the beach, but also fall, it's getting colder, you're staying inside more, it's dark at night sooner. So yeah, I wonder if like the seasons affect book sales. I'll have to do some research into that.
Yeah, that's, I actually haven't thought about that, but thank you for bringing that up because that's important market research that I should probably be doing too. The two big like seasons that would jump out to me would be like definitely summer and then a holiday, mm-hmm. just if I had to guess, but obviously I have no data to back that up as of right now, so.
But we will soon. Well, yes. I'll make it on the what am I trying to say? Let's just move on.
On the thing. But that was kind of our long weekly progress update. It's been a while, so hope you guys enjoyed hearing that we've actually made some progress. But now onto our weekly writing topics. This one kind of plays off of what we were just talking about with our progress updates. But seeing as neither of us are full-time authors, you know, we both have day jobs, both have families, hobbies, things like that. Something that a lot of indie authors struggle to do, I think, is find a good balance of writing, you know, having time to write and managing all those other things in life without letting writing, you know, fall to the wayside too much or also take over too much and impact those other areas of life. So I know everyone approaches this differently, but how do you balance, you know, your desire to write and tell stories with everything else that you have to do in life?
Very poorly. This is a constant struggle. It is a constant, doom cycle in my head where it's constant guilt of not doing enough or never creating enough time, not saying no to events with friends in order to write. I think we've talked about this before. I'm not really someone who is good at holding myself accountable to things. I usually I have to have someone behind me pushing me like pretty constantly, which is something I myself am working on not having to do. It's so hard. I'm always impressed by people who are able to juggle families and like full-time jobs and still self-publish books. It can be done. I don't know what they sold to be able to do this, who they convinced, you know. I don't know. It's crazy to me because I get home after a really long day, or I work from home on the days that I do, and then I finish and I'm like, I stare at a screen all day. And I know you're kind of similar in that way, like with both of our jobs. It's like constantly staring, constantly reading. I mean, I do research for a living. So to then switch gears and continue to write throughout the evening, it's hard. So I haven't found a balance yet, to be frank, and I don't know, you know, I think that is just like an ever evolving process. I have been every day trying to at least, and this sounds so minimal, but it's kind of like what you were saying when you adjusted to getting up early in the morning. I'm not that person, so in the evenings I try and at least get 100 words.
Yeah.
Because if it's just 100 words, that's 100 that you didn't have beforehand. And almost always it ultimately ends up being like 600 to 1,000. I like get in the groove and it's 30, 45 minutes of writing. And then I'm like, oh, I've got 720 today. So I don't think I have any advice coming from someone who really is struggling with that. I don't know. So if you have any advice, Brandon, I know we're supposed to be like this helpful podcast, but it is genuinely one of the most challenging things to do that I've found, at least in my experience.
No, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I really don't have much advice on this topic. You know, I would say if I do Is my audio still good?
You're good. Yeah.
Okay. I thought I hit a button and I didn't know which button I hit. Mm-hmm. So, but no, I think like the advice that I do have is just kind of the general stuff you always hear, like find what works best for you and, you know, things like that. Cause it's, there's no one size fits all to this for anybody, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone that I see on BookTok has a totally different process. And I'm still figuring mine out. I set very small goals for myself, like you do with the 100 words. Sometimes I'll just say, like, if I can just sit down and read and think about, like, where I'm taking things, that's enough. Yeah. If I'm that mentally exhausted, just devoting some energy to, you know, the story each day. But I definitely don't have a perfect balance. I'm still working on it. I decided a long time ago I would never let anything work-related, and that includes writing, come before, like, family and health. So when it comes to a decision between do I work out today or do I write, I'm almost always going to choose, you know, the health, because at the end of the day, I want to be here longer so I can write more. So, you know, things like that. I try not to be too hard on myself, which can be hard because I also have a hard time holding myself accountable because I do have really bad ADHD. And so sometimes I just forget things or get distracted and then I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I was supposed to do this. But yeah, it's hard. And I think, you know, I think we're both still figuring it out. And I think sharing that is just as helpful. Maybe not just as helpful, but it's just as important. Because I think on BookTok, you can see a lot of people who have what seems like perfect writing processes. You know, they have the perfect balance, and it can make you feel a little insecure in your own writing if you don't have that yet. Just know it's okay.
Yeah, it is okay. And that's a good point. It's like, I have such a hard time not making everything perfect as I go along, so that when I read what I wrote for part two so far, I'm like, this is ass. Like, not even in like a fun, like, oh, self-deprecating way. I'm like, this isn't good. But then I have to remember that, like, again, my favorite quote, I've said it a couple times on this podcast, but it's Neil Gaiman, like, you know, when someone asks, how does the first draft compare to the last draft? And he's like, they're almost nothing alike. That wasn't word for word, but they don't resemble each other at all. So I have to be, one, it's hard to give up what you write, you know, when you like have to cull something or edit something down or just completely remove it.
Yeah.
You're like, no, I wrote it. It's perfect. And on the other hand, you can get like too stuck where you're like, okay, well, I don't know what to write at all. So it is hard to see these people who are busting out books, which good for them. But yeah, we are a community of people who are taking their time and doing the best that they can.
Well, I'm glad we're kind of both on the same page there, because I always feel awkward when I'm like talking with someone who's way more productive with their writing than I am.
I also just like my evenings. I like my evening to scroll and to watch movies with my boyfriend and to just have friends over if they want to hang out. Like, I have a good social life.
Yeah.
And so it's just so hard to like take that into account too. And then you go on TikTok at the end of the evening and you see all these people being super productive and, you know, not many people being honest about what that entails. Like, I'm seeing your 20-second TikTok, but did you actually write all evening? Most of the time, usually not. Or if they do, it's like the only day that they can. So we're all doing our best, and some people are doing it better than others, I think, in terms of being more productive. But that's okay.
Yeah, definitely. And don't ever feel bad for, you know, prioritizing relationships and personal health and things like that, because those are what matter most, I think. Well, this one was kind of a last minute thought when I was running out of topic ideas, but there's been a lot of adaptation news recently. Like, there's a bunch of trailers. I just finished, I know it's not a book adaptation, but I just finished the Fallout show, which was absolutely amazing, and I loved every second of it.
I know.
And in book adaptations, we have like season 2 of House of the Dragon, Rings of Power, and there's just all kinds of adaptations coming out again.
The Dune adaptation, the Dune Prophecy.
I have, like, yeah, that one. And I also have a confession to make. I have not seen Dune 2 yet, because when it comes to watching movies and shows, me and my siblings have like a very tight schedule, and we only watch things together usually. Like, there's very few shows or movies that I'll watch on my own free time. Like, usually we have like a group chat, and we'll be like, okay, these are the ones we're watching together, so nobody watch these. Dune 2 is one of them, so we were waiting for it to come to digital, either streaming or just to rent, just because some of my siblings have kids and it's hard for us to get to the theater. I know it's the best place to see movies like this, but it just doesn't always work sometimes.
That's sweet, though. I appreciate it.
Yeah, but I like my movie nights with my siblings, so Dune 2 is next. We just finished Fallout, so.
Yeah, oh, Fallout, so good. I think Dune is officially out now, like, for streaming.
Yes,
so.
It is.
There's no excuse now, just make it happen.
I know, we're going to do it.
But yeah, the adaptations are insane. I like an adaptation if it's done well. Mm-hmm. I'll say that. There have been a few recently that I think have done great. Dune, great. Fallout, excellent. Even Bridgerton. I know it's very much not like the books, but I love Bridgerton. I'm a Bridgerton bitch.
I see it in your Instagram stories.
Yeah, I had like a party. Yeah, so I think adaptations, which I think is also a movie or a book. I can't remember. to me, I'm getting annoyed by them actually more as we go on.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing enough original blockbuster big content movies.
That's true.
And A24 has kind of taken the indie film space by storm, so that now the A24 movies are becoming, sorry for my dog barking.
That's okay.
you know, they've kind of taken off, and so now they're like the big thing, and we've got these franchises now, like even the horror franchises and the adaptations of this, but it's a lot, and so I'm okay for now. I think I'm fine. Like, we've hit our adaptation. Even one of my favorite, Holly Black's Spiderwick Chronicles got made into a new TV series after the movie in the early 2000s. And it's on like Roku now, but it's just so overwhelming. There are like so many, too many options. Like, streaming has become just like cable at this point, where you're like, what do I watch, when and how? So I'm okay for now. We've done it. We're good.
Well, more on adaptation specifically, first I want to ask, you said you like them when they're done well. Everyone kind of has different opinions, but what makes an adaptation done well in your opinion? Like, what is most important to you? I know, like, obviously there's some things, like, you want it to be faithful to a certain extent to the source material, but are there any other, I guess, criteria that you have for adaptations?
Yeah, so that's actually another great question. All good questions today. Okay, so my peak, like, upper echelon, best of the best, can do no wrong to me, is Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. I think that trilogy to this day holds up as one of the best adaptations done of a very dense, very thick book.
Yeah.
Particularly the extended editions, because that's all we watch in this household. So what I found later on, after I'd seen them, you know, in theaters as a kid for the first time, and then I watched them like at least once a month. That's just my go-to comfort. I'm trying to look. But yeah, it's got to hold true to the theme and the aesthetic, right? I think the characters are obviously essentially important. They don't necessarily need to look identical. I don't care about fan casts or anything the casting choices are, I don't really care about.
Yeah.
And as long as it hits the major plot points, you can mix some things around most of the time, which is like what Lord of the Rings did, right? Like, there are certain things that are taken out, not included for the sake of time and space. But it has to, in my opinion, embrace the aesthetic and the themes of the books well enough that there's no doubt that this is a true adaptation of a film. I think Pride and Prejudice, the 2005 movie, did a great job of that. Mm-hmm. It hits all of the major plot points. The lines are in there, like the classic lines, whatever. And the aesthetic of it all feels like a Jane Austen novel. Lord of the Rings felt like you were on this journey with them. Harry Potter in the same way. Yeah. Tons of gripes about that series, but there, it gets darker, just like each of the book does. And the castle doesn't change, but, you know, it gets gloomier. And so I think to me that really makes or breaks, in my humble opinion, whether or not an adaptation is successful. Like Fallout could have been done really horribly. Mm-hmm. Could have been kitschy. It could have been cheesy. It could have been, you know, all this crazy stuff that you see in the games. But it made sure to keep with the theme and keep it the aesthetic enough that they could play within that. So yeah, that was my long ramble about adaptations.
Yeah, no.
What about you?
I totally agree. Like, I'm, you know, obviously I want it to be, like I said, faithful to a certain extent. I know it's different mediums, so naturally things are going to need to change. I'm totally okay with that. But it really just depends on the extent, I guess, and it's kind of a case-by-case basis. Two recent examples I can think of are Fallout, which is a video game adaptation, and then the Halo show, which is also a video game adaptation.
Oh, I love that. It looked, the previews looked so cheesy and awful that I was like, I can't.
It's hard when I have the Fallout show, which is, like, to me, the perfect example of how to adapt a video game into another medium. Yeah. And then there's Halo, which is like the exact opposite. It's like and I say that as someone who has been playing Halo since he probably was too young to, but I did anyway.
Right.
It's one of my favorite game series of all time, but the show has nothing to do with the story of the games whatsoever. And it's weird because with Fallout, there was a conscious decision to tell a new story that doesn't contradict the games. So.
Right.
Smart. It's still something new, but it's a story that's better suited to television, and it's not like crapping on the story of the games or anything. Whereas the Halo show is a really butchered retelling of the story of the games, which was not fun to watch. So yeah, to me, a certain faithfulness is needed. Like, I don't want to watch, if you're giving me a Halo show, I want the story to feel like a Halo show. Like, give me some callbacks to the games. It's okay if you change some things. But if you want to tell a different story, then just make an original piece of media. Like, I don't know why some of these adaptations are so different. I think they're just banking on, you know, that it's an existing fan base, so it's easy to sell. But and then, like you said, the aesthetic and the themes are really important. When it comes to, like, make it feel like what you're adapting.
A couple of recent examples too that kind of go off of that, of just like being just unfortunately like just not hitting the mark, is, well, one, I think another video game to a TV adaptation that did really well was The Last of Us. I think they crushed it with that. But those that have failed recently that are book related are The Rings of Power, which sucks because I was really excited. And the Witcher series keeps, like, the first season was, because it hit the major plot points of the first book, and you were like, got it. Okay, cool. We're like kind of on the same vein, but enough liberty that you were like, awesome. He looks like Geralt. Everyone's looking like everybody, you know, the aesthetic, the darkness of it all hit every mark. And then the second season rolls around and you're like, okay, we're getting a little off the plot right now. Like, we're no longer anywhere in the realm of what actually happened. And then the third season, I had to stop watching because, one, it just became, the costumes became like too comical looking, and the vibe had shifted. Same with Rings of Power, too bright, too shiny, too like CGI'd, you know? So there's something to be said about, like, if you're going to do a new piece of media or an adaptation from the world of what you're taking, you can successfully do it well if you're telling a new, fresh story.
Yeah.
It pleases the fans while drawing in new ones. but it can also just go so, so, so poorly. I'm so mad about Witcher.
I actually have not finished the Witcher books yet. The furthest I've gotten is like a little bit into book one, so very light reading in the book series. I did enjoy the first season. I did have some issues with, like, I was a little confused with the timeline, but after doing some reading and stuff, it was fine, so I wasn't like too upset by that. I did stop watching, I think, at the end of season two when they announced that Henry Cavill was leaving, just because he is Geralt to me that I can't. Yeah. I know I'm not going to be able to get over a new cast for the.
No, have you seen the pictures of him?
I have, like, not, and I feel bad for Liam Hemsworth because he's just trying to get paid, and you know, he's going to get so much for that, but I can't.
And it's hard because you have people like Henry Cavill who obviously very much care about the franchise. They read the books. They played the games. They are involved and genuinely love, like, what they do. Like, the Bridgerton cast. Like, mm-hmm. they very much care about the franchise that they are working in.
Yeah.
But then things happen, and then you're just kind of like, well, that can't carry an entire season. You have to have all these additional, you know, components to make it good. So anyway, RIP to those series we will never finish because they're too bad.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But a little bit more on the topic of adaptation, since we're kind of a little below schedule here. The main reason I wanted to talk about it before I ranted a little bit about some adaptations I don't like. As someone who is going to be a published author one day, what are your thoughts on your work potentially being adapted one day? I know it's you know, it's mostly just a dream for most of us, but is it something you would even want, or, you know, how would you even approach that if that was a conversation you were having with, like, someone who wanted to come in and adapt your work into TV or film or whatever?
Yeah, that's a challenging question. I think because I'm so sick of adaptations right now, I just say no.
Yeah.
But you also have to, like, let's be honest, the money would be so good. Yeah. Like, it would be awesome. But the caveat is that suddenly this new entity and company takes kind of control over what you've written and adapts it to their whims. And, you know, people like, I'm blanking. She did Shadow and Bone. She's like one of my Leigh Bardugo. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry. Leigh Bardugo was very much involved with the writing and the planning and the progression of the seasons mm-hmm. of Shadow and Bone. It got canceled, unfortunately. Yeah. I was the one that I was like good with the changes that they made. It was fun. It was like, it's whatever. Yeah. But, you know, she was very heavily involved. Same with J.K. Rowling, even though we don't like her anymore. Back in the day, heavily involved in the progression of the series. I think that is the only way that I would be willing to hand off, like, film or show rights to anybody mm-hmm. would be I would want to be involved. I would be on set. I would want to be included in changes and things like that. I don't know. It's hard. You don't want them to butcher your babies.
Yeah.
You know? You don't want them to, like, take something and make it awful. Mm-hmm. So that's the scary part, is that depending on who it is, it can go so, so poorly. And then you have to consider if, like, you have enough fans that it gets made into a series.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, like, is this something that they want? Because mm-hmm. the Sarah J. Maas fandom cannot agree on who they're fan casting, and then they start to rip each other's throats out. And you're like, okay, this is why it's not being made into a show, because it's a lot of pressure. It is a lot of social pressure to get right and to do well. So I lean more towards, like, 70% no, 30% under the right circumstances, yes.
Yeah, that's fair. I completely glossed over your point earlier about there being too many adaptations, but I do agree that I would also like to see more original media in, like, every industry. This is like Hollywood, it's video games, it's kind of even books now to a certain extent, where everything's just an existing big franchise already. Like, give me some new stuff. But that's a topic we could dive into more a little bit another day.
That's a good one.
Yeah. But no, I'm kind of of the same mind. Like, I would, if I by some chance ever got my work adapted, which I doubt will ever happen, but you never know. If that
never
did,
say never.
Yeah. Well, if that did happen, I would like you, I would like to be involved as much as possible. Not to say that, you know, I would be opposed to changes or anything like that. I just would want to be involved in the conversations and in the creative process. Because I think, you know, now that we're talking about it, most of the successful adaptations, pretty much all of the ones I can think of, have had the original creator involved extensively. And they were usually open to the changes that were made as well.
Right.
Even you look at Game of Thrones, which I know fell out of favor. But when you look at the timeline, it kind of fell out of favor when George also stepped back from the show as well. So there's something to be said for that. I think that it is important to involve the original creator.
Because they have insight, right? Like they have insight into, like, okay, so we can't make this scene happen, but it is important to the character development. Mm-hmm. What would this character do that we can make happen to show that same development in a different situation? Like, the author knows these characters and the world more intimately than even any reader could, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I think that's why it's such a benefit to have the author, or the original creator, on the show for the entire series. You know, because then it just falls into literal, like, we all just, there's no more Game of Thrones merch anywhere to be found. No one cares. Like, I mean, it's dangerous. You can really mess up. So
yeah, definitely.
But I'm excited for season two of House of the Dragon.
Me too. Did you read Fire and Blood? I know it wasn't for everybody because it's kind of like a history book, but I enjoyed it.
I think my uncle has, like, the illustrated version.
Oh,
I think
good.
There's an illustrated version. And I read, like, a couple blips from that, but I didn't
really get into it. I enjoyed it, but it definitely, it's not like a traditional George R. R. Martin book. It's very much a history book. So you have to, I saw a lot of reviews when that came out that were, like, mad about that, even though it was, like, very much announced beforehand. It was, like, very much said by Martin and the publisher, like, this is not The Winds of Winter, this is a history book. But anyway,
It's like The Silmarillion. It's like The Silmarillion. You read it and you're like, who is, what is happening? And you're like, no, this is the history of Middle Earth, so, you know, just buckle up, I guess, or fall asleep. It depends on how you read it.
Well, those are our kind of long-winded thoughts on adaptations. I could probably talk endlessly about those, but the next topic we have is research. I think as writers, you know, we joke about our Google search history and things like that, but it, when you're dealing with topics or genres like fantasy and science fiction that kind of blend a little bit of reality with, you know, things that obviously aren't real, it can be tricky to know, like, okay, when do I research? When do I just make it up? And, you know, what's the right approach? So I was kind of curious, because for A Knight of Knives, I didn't really do a lot of research. And, you know, it just kind of depends on the project I'm working on. If I'm trying to, like, base something off of maybe a specific culture, then I'll definitely, you know, immerse myself in that and research as much as I can. But I wouldn't say research is, like, a big thing for me unless I'm really worried about getting something wrong or, like, really want to, I guess, make sure I'm approaching a sensitive topic in the right way. Or, you know, if I was writing something like historical, then, you know, that'd be very different. But does research play a big role in your writing process at all? Or are you kind of just, you know, only, are you kind of like me where it's, you know, as needed?
No, I'm very much a heavy researcher.
You do it for work too, so.
I do. I don't know if it's the double history degree in me wanting accuracy or if it's, like, some weird, like, anal retentive control thing. But not all of it. And actually recently I've realized I need to come up with a few, I need to work on the uniqueness in A Filthy Hunger more. I've seen, I don't know, I think you follow her, Jordan. She talks at length and shows at length, like, her, she's like created her own calendar. She's created her own, like, ways that they talk about the seasons in her world. And I just realized, like, I think I'm relying a little bit too heavily on the medieval concept, like, you know, just very average in terms of mythos and world. World building. So it's always good to do that and to look at other authors and be like, oh, actually, I'm inspired to be a little bit more. But for research purposes, what I tend to try and, like, I just strive for accuracy. So in, like, my main city of Rivenmere, the citadel, I wanted to make sure I got the components of the citadel correctly, that when the characters are moving through the citadel itself, they're moving from, like, the main room into the narthex, right? Like, what is a narthex? Okay. Well, I know that because I'm Catholic and, you know, what, that's like, blah. Yep. But most people don't know that. So I'm like, okay, but this is the historically or the physically accurate description of what this space is. And it is essential to a building like that, right? So that's kind of what I mean when I, like, research stuff. It's like parts of a keep, like a battle keep, the barbicans that go around, like, what are those cards, the portcullis, like, components of things I want to get right, only because I feel like that just provides a little bit more grounding and a little bit more realism. I did get feedback from my parents who don't know what a barbican or a portcullis is, and they were like, what is this word? So that's a balance too of, like, in striving for accuracy, are you, like, removing a readership, like, a group of readers who might not know or, like, want to look that up. So yeah, it's hard. I think first drafts for me, I strive for that. It's mostly just physical places and locations or, like, specific sword moves. I know, like, G.R. Martin does this a lot, like, when he's describing, like, sword fighting or, like, when Arya was training, learning how to fight. But, like, what do you call a backhanded swing? Like, what do you, is it, like, different styles of fighting is what I'm looking at recently, what I've been looking at recently, and is going to be one of my next week's resources. But yeah, things like that, just to make it feel more realistic and less just like, she shoved a sword into someone's stomach. It's like, okay, but, like, what kind of sword? what's that move called? You know, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, that's kind of, that's what I mean when I do research.
Very cool. I think you definitely do more than me, but I do want to kind of go back to my earlier comments. I haven't done, like, no research. I kind of, I want to rephrase that. Like, I...
Classic.
Okay. Sorry, guys. It's like clockwork, but... no, I... Like, if there's something I don't already have, like, some level of understanding or knowledge about, then I will definitely research it. I want my story to feel grounded in reality, and, you know, realistic as much as possible. I just meant, like, I don't get too caught up in all of the details. Like, sometimes as I did early on, but, you know, as I was researching certain things, it was like, well, the name of this is derived from this, you know, historical context. And I'm like, well, that historical context doesn't exist here. Sure. So I some words I'll still use just because they're so commonplace now for that thing that it wouldn't make sense to not use it. It would be more confusing. But, you know, kind of just a case-by-case basis of, okay, do I need to – would it benefit the story to make this feel more grounded in reality? And if so, then I'll do some research on that. But I haven't found that I have needed to do a lot of that yet. Not to say that I'm opposed to it or anything, though. I feel like I came off wrong in the beginning, but
no, you didn't at all. No, I think that's a good point. It's like, you know, in certain scenarios, some things you can't use. So how are you going to adapt? Like, it's like the champagne effect in, like, fantasy novels. If you use the word champagne in your fantasy novels, well, we know champagne is only coming from a region in France, the Champagne region. So, like, theoretically, you can't have that in your high fantasy novel, you know, unless it's, like, set in the future of whatever. So that's when you, like, at least for me, it's like, okay, what other types of, like, you know, back in the day, medieval wine. Like, what were they making wine out of? Okay, berries. So what kind of berry? Okay, let's do rosemary wine, which is an herb, not a berry. But, like, you know, like, so instead of saying champagne, they're going to drink rosemary wine. Or rosemary wine. you know, or like, I don't know, stuff like that. And that's when the research definitely comes into play. Because you're like, all right, I want to not do this, so... how do I do that well without it just coming off like you threw words on a page and you were like, yeah, that just believe it. Just believe it.
One thing that I definitely do put a lot of like focus on researching for is like large battle sequences and things like that, because I've seen so many that are done poorly. Even as someone who's not like, I don't have like a degree in historical battles or anything, but just there are some in specifically in like TV and film too that are just done really awfully. Like you just know that's not how that works. And so I don't want my stories to come off that way. I would like them to feel like I at least put some thought into how this goes down. But yeah, battles and like the logistics of how, you know, everything, all the moving pieces in those sequences. It's very important to me to get that at least somewhat right. You know, it's fantasy, so I'm going to take some liberties, but I still need it to be believable.
Yes. And I think that is like maybe a lesson to be learned from certain like indie authors, is that like, if you want it to feel, in my opinion, if you want your fantasy, or even if it's not a fantasy, even if your novel is taking place in the real world, even like in an urban setting, research it, right? Mm-hmm. Like what are the streets look like at night? Go on Google Images. Okay. That's what we're working with. Is this neighborhood in New York City? What's that look like? What's the vibe? Like what's the news say about it? Mm-hmm. And then you get kind of a concept, or at least a loose enough one, to be like, all right, I can work with this. This is the realm I work in. I've seen, unfortunately, novels either not do that well or not do that at all, and it loses the essence of the place that they're in or the time that they're in. Historical romances can go so south for that exact reason, especially like in language. That's not a thing a lot of people tend to pick up on, or like realize that if you want it to, this is all aesthetic, it's all about your writing style, but if you're really going for like historical accuracy or a certain type of aesthetic, like medieval style, it's like, I think language is so important. They're not using y'all, they're not, you know, they're not using, you know, these like modern terms of phrase. And if I see that in books that are supposed to be historical romances or fantasies in general, if the that was one of my main problems with Fourth Wing, was that the way they were speaking and like how they were interacting with one another was so 2023 it felt so removed from this fantasy setting. So another thing to research is language. So
I'm the same way. I can't like, I can't read or watch something where it's lost train of thought, but not just language, clothing I've noticed in some recent adaptations is very modern looking, and that really throws me off as well. I'm like, that they're not wearing it. I can only suspend my disbelief so much, right?
Correct. Do some, it's like the infamous, it's the infamous like coffee, Starbucks coffee in like the last season of you know, everyone's like, we don't even know what happened in the episode because we were all just screaming about the Starbucks coffee cup on this table. But like, that's exactly your point. It just removes you from this immersive experience.
Well, I think that's all of our writing topics, so we can move on to our resources. You'll notice mine is blank. Don't worry, I have something, but it's not as good as yours.
Well, I doubt that, Brandon. Do you want to go first?
I'll go first just because it's not like an actual resource. It's not like a website or like a physical book you can get. In reality, I just couldn't find a resource that I was happy to share. So it led me to something that I notice online a lot, is a lot of the questions that aspiring writers or people who are, you know, beginning their writing journey ask could be solved by just reading books. So that's my resource, books. Just read them.
So good.
I know that's kind of a cop out for me not having a resource, but seriously, just read them.
Yes.
If you have a question, you will likely find the answer. If you just read some of your favorite authors or some of your favorite books, I
Yes.
promise you it will help. Just be actively reading. A lot of times I'll come across advice on Book Talk. One that was like really controversial a while ago was don't use dialogue tags that aren't the word said. So what I did immediately after hearing that, because a lot of people were like in the comments agreeing with this guy and he has lots of followers, so like I was like, okay, is this a thing that successful authors do? So I opened up two of my favorite authors, George R. R. Martin and Joe Abercrombie, and sure enough, in the first 15 pages, there's like a dozen dialogue tags. So I was like, clearly there's no, rule, at least
That's
that the successful authors are following, so I'm not gonna follow it.
right.
But yeah, just if you get writing advice, just double check, see what the successful people in your genre are doing, see what the stories you like are doing, and just kind of use that. Not saying just copy, but
Yeah,
if it doesn't feel
no.
right to you, just kind of, you look very upset about the dialogue text.
I am, but that I'm agreeing with you. I don't want to interrupt.
No,
That's a great reason.
it's okay. I've noticed online that it seems like a lot of people who want to write don't read or don't analyze like the things they're reading as much as they should. So, it's nice to have all these resources in your bookmarks and on your shelf and things like that, but I think the first most important thing you need to do as a writer is read. And so that's why that's my cop-out answer for this week.
I actually don't think that's a cop-out answer. I understand that you didn't have a resource, so this is your advice. But I think that is actually, I haven't heard that advice on here before, and I think it is extremely appropriate because you're right. If I don't know how to comma something in a dialogue, or if I'm like just curious about like, I don't know where this pause should go. Commas mostly because I'm bad with commas. I will like open up a book and be like, find a sentence that looks just like mine and be like, that's how you do it. Okay, cool. You don't need to be a linguist. You don't need to be like a like English person to understand. I don't understand how and where and things, blah blah blah, clauses and blah. But you're exactly right. Just go open a book, go read it. What do you like most about your favorite author? What do they do well? There, every now and then I'll write a sentence that I'm like, ooh, this sounds like V.E. Schwab, or this sounds like Holly Black. And that's okay because that's who you're inspired by, and they have similar writing styles of their favorite authors from when they were back, when they were kids. Yeah, craft. It's all about craft. And crafting is, it includes reading, so
Yeah,
sweet.
definitely. Yes, read
Also,
your books.
screw that guy who said that. I don't, if I read a page and all they're saying is said, I'm like, where are we? What are we doing? How did they say it? Are they just like, it's like a sim. Are we just standing here saying said? That's annoying.
I'm
Anyway.
pretty sure the video is taken down now too, which is
Good.
extra funny. But yeah, no, I completely agree. That's not a piece of advice I could follow. I would get really bored using the same word over and over again.
I'm like such a thesaurus whore too. Like I'm like, how can I say this better? Because I don't have a good vocabulary unless I look it up in the thesaurus. Is that a word that I would use if I thought about it? Yeah, I'll use that then. But if is it a word that's crazy insane that I would never use in casual conversation, I'm not going to use that word. I'm going to use the one that I know.
It's funny you say that because I've definitely read sentences where someone very clearly looked up synonyms for another word, and this one does not fit at all. But
Yes, I have too. Oh, God.
I know you have a cool writing resource to share as well, so.
Yeah. You know what, Brandon? Speaking of thesauruses, I have quite a few here. So this is my favorite, and I can't believe I've never brought this up. So these are by Angela Ackerman and Becca Puglisi. They are found on Amazon or probably your local library, but I like to highlight and to mark kind of person, whatever. but you won't be able to see it because it's like reversed, whatever. But these are the thesauruses of various kinds. So I have volume 1 and volume 2 of the conflict thesaurus.
Ooh, okay.
So if you, for example, I've got the ones marked that occur in my stories. So if you are leaving one's homeland, if you're leaving your homeland, there is a section on that, and it includes examples, minor complications, potentially disastrous results, emotions that are tied with the event, internal struggles, negative traits, impact on basic needs, positive traits, positive outcomes. It goes on and on and on. So it's a whole series. So I have two of the conflict thesaurus and the emotion thesaurus. So if you want to say something that means sad, you flip to sad, or let's say like humiliation, and then it gives you the definition and a bunch of physical signs and behaviors associated with the feeling, as well as like mental issues that you can face, signs that the emotion is being suppressed, could escalate to, and then it'll be like, humiliation may escalate to depression, and then you flip to 84 and it's depression, and then you get to go off of that. Associated power verbs that you can use. So genuinely really good for like post first draft. You're really trying to hone it down and you want something to be a little bit more varied, a little bit more structured. I don't know, just better crafted. These are a holy grail. They have tons of other ones too. Like,
yeah.
What was the one that I saw today? The negative trait thesaurus or the rural setting thesaurus. So,
oh, wow.
We've got them all. That is my resource for the week.
Very cool. Oh, also welcome, Mandy. We're wrapping up almost, but long time no see. It's a couple weeks off.
Yeah,
I've heard of the emotion thesaurus too, but I didn't know they had so many other ones. Sounds dangerous for my wallet, but I definitely.
They're not that expensive. They're, I mean, the one that I have is, if you do it in paperback, I guess they have gotten kind of expensive, but you can buy them used and just kind of shop around. But yeah, would completely recommend. I annotate the crap out of them. I use them when I'm in a sticky situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like they have a lot of like detailed information too. Like not just, oh, use like this word is somewhat, you know, related to this word, like very specific, which I like.
I was really surprised. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they have the like internal sensations for defensiveness might be feeling the thrum of one's own pulse due to blood pressure, dry mouth, and an intense thirst. Like, they give you so much to help so you don't have to say said or sad, you know? Like, but anyway, yeah.
I definitely have to pick it up. So thank you for sharing that one. I already did my, you know, non-resource resource, but
we'll save like that. But yeah, I guess we covered everything today. It's kind of a shortened episode.
Yeah, we're like about 15 minutes under our usual time. I think the only one with us right now is Mandy. So Mandy, if you have any questions or topic suggestions for next week, please let us know. We don't get many, so if you have any, I would love to tackle them next week. I do know people listen to our show, though, because I track the analytics on the RSS. I don't know if you've ever... Have you gone to it?
I haven't. It slips my mind.
Yeah, no, it's... I think they update it, like, once a day. And so, like, our all-time downloads across all episodes are 46, and it estimates that the returning view count for each episode is about 5 people. So it's humble beginnings, but it's more, honestly, than I expected this early.
Yeah.
So.
5 consistent listeners. We'll take it, despite the crappy audio too. Thanks, guys.
The only thing I need to figure out now is how to reach those people, like for feedback, because they're listening on podcast platforms like Spotify and whatnot. So I don't know how to get feedback from them. That's the only problem.
Do you have our, you know, here's a question. I think this is in like our, you and I need to discuss, but if they are listening at the end of this, you know, if they're listening later, it's like, should we like have an email that we can put out, or that's like an Instagram for the podcast itself, that way we can like clip things and then like work with engagement that way if they do have feedback, there's like a place that they can go. Do we need to put our own like Instagrams? And a Google form's a good idea, Mandy.
Yeah,
do we need to put our information in so that they can reach out to us and be like, hey, can you talk about this? If there's any, if they have thoughts, I'd be interested, because five people's more than zero.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good.
Especially like consistently now that we have like, this will be our seventh episode. Another stat we broke is RSS told me about 80 to 90% of podcasts don't make it past either episode 7 or 8. So we're about to pass that too, which is nice. But yeah, well, I think you had already mentioned in our, you know, collaborative doc about making social media specifically for Quill and Query. So we'll definitely work on that and figure out what the best approach is, and then share that with everybody. But if you are listening on a podcast platform right now and you don't know where to find us, you can find me on TikTok at Brandon Hall Author. I'm pretty sure that's my handle. If not, I'll update that. But my Instagram is Brandon H Author, because somehow Brandon Hall Author was taken on Instagram, so I had to shorten my last name. But that is where you can find me, and we'll work on getting those official pages up for you guys as well, so it's easier to find. Ash, do you want to shout out your handles real quick so they know where to find you as well?
If I can. Yeah, if I know them by heart, this will be interesting. My TikTok at is Ashhole Book Reviews, all one word. I think it's Ashhole Book Reviews.
I was just checking it for you.
Perfect, thank you. And then my writer Instagram is A.M._Acock, AYCOCK. Boom.
My doppelganger. Thank you, Mandy. Yeah. That actually happened to me. I was impersonated online before, which is why I don't show my face very much. But
oh, were you really?
Yeah, like 17 too. It was really weird, but
That's so strange.
It is strange, but it's cleared up, and I just make sure I'm extra careful now. But yeah. So sorry, a little bit of weird personal lore for you guys. But
okay, Brandon lore, it's always scattered in every now and then, and I like eat it up. I'm like, ooh, new Brandon lore has dropped today.
Well, thank you so much, Ash. It was great to be back here with you. I missed our podcast episodes. Do you have any closing thoughts for everybody before we sign off?
Not really. I keep on trucking. We're gonna keep trucking. I'm excited that we're back. Let us know if you have any feedback, and we will make sure that we are back ready to rock next week.
Awesome. Yeah, I don't have anything to add. Just same thing. Cool.
Perfect. Bye, Mandy. It was good to see you.
See you, Mandy. See you, Ash.
All right. Bye. See ya.